This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
He was born in the year 194 after Hijrah, and he was born in Al-Bukhara. Al-Bukhara is present-day Uzbekistan. And he was born as a non-Arab. But look what he achieved in Arabic. Allahu Akbar. He was a non-Arab, and Al-Imam Muslim also was a non-Arab, and Al-Imam Abu Dawud was a non-Arab, and Al-Imam Tirmidhi was an Arab, and many others. But look what they achieved in Arabic. And as the saying goes, those on top of mountains today, they didn't come from the heavens. Where were they? They were in the dirt yesterday. True? Everyone starts on the bottom. So you have to start somewhere, as I was telling one of the brothers earlier. You start somewhere, and then eventually you get to the top. But it took a lot of hard work, and look what they achieved. Allahu Akbar, amazing. Now, as for his full name, it was Muhammad Ibn, who knows? Ismail al-Bukhari. Muhammad ibn Ismail al-Bukhari. That was his full name. And he was born blind. SubhanAllah. But despite that, his mother never lost sight, pun intended, of the one who could cure her son, Allah Azza wa Jal. So she made dua upon dua upon dua. And when you make dua with a sincere intention and your heart is present, Allah will respond. As Sheikh Abdul Aziz Al-Tarifi eloquently said, أَكْثَرُ دُعَاءِ النَّاسِ اِهْدِنَا الصِّرَاطَ الْمُسْتَقِيمِ وَمَعَ ذَلِكَ كَثِيرٌ مِّنْهُمْ يَضِلُّونَ. The most common dua of the Muslims today is, guide us to the straight path. Yet most of them go astray. Why? Because there's no hudur, there's no presence of the heart. He said, حُضُورُ الْقَلْبِ عِنْدَ الدُعَاءِ شَرْطٌ لِلْإِجَابَةِ. The presence of the heart is a condition for it to be accepted. So that's a condition. So she had, of course, you can imagine, the mother, or those who are fathers, you can relate to that. Your kid, when they get hurt, you'd rather you get hurt 10 times over than for them to even have a scratch. So it'd rather happen to you than to your child. So she made dua upon dua, and Allah Azza wa Jal blessed him with eyesight. And what did she do after that? She took him from Uzbekistan to Mecca. And she traveled as a widow. So to make matters worse, her husband died. And Al-Bukhari was orphaned. He was an orphan. On top of that, calamities upon calamities. And she took him from Uzbekistan. She didn't just sit there feel sorry for herself. And she made the best of out of a bad situation. She took him from Uzbekistan to Mecca. Why? So he can receive an Islamic education. And from Uzbekistan to Mecca, that's difficult. She didn't have an SUV, four-wheel drive in the desert, camelback. And no five-star hotel on the way. No, she had to stay in a tent, and on the way it was very difficult. But Allahu Akbar, look at her sacrifice. Because the bigger your sacrifice, the bigger the reward. Look what she got. A scholar as a child. Sometimes parents say, you know what, Markaz Al-Imam Ahmad is too far. Or, you know, Unity Grammar is just too far, 20 minutes. I'm too busy as a parent, you know. I've got stuff to do. Well, she traveled from Uzbekistan to Mecca alone. So, as for his travel and knowledge, that's where we can start, in Mecca. So she used to go to Mecca, of course, for her son, but also for Hajj. And at times, she would complete her hajj and want to go back. And when she would do that, Al-Bukhari, what would he do? Please take me home, mum. No, leave me here, mum. Let me stay in Mecca. You go, I'll catch up with you later. So when she would perform hajj and wanting to go back to Bukhara, he'd want to stay there. So of course, his travels and knowledge began with his mother. And that's the first institute in school. Al-Ummu Madrasa, إِذَا عَدَدْتَهَا أَعَدَدْتَ شَعْبًا طَيِّبَ الْعَرَبِ. The woman is the school, the institute. If you prepare her well, you've prepared a great people. So therefore, it started with the mother at home. There's no better school than a righteous home, and there's no better teacher than a virtuous parent. A lot of people, they complain about the school, or the masjid, or the markaz, or the private college. No, you should start in the home, Habibi. And he finished his elementary studies at 11. In other words, that's when he finished school. When he was 11 years old, that's when he finished. And that's when he started serious hadith. And he was always learning before that, but he really started serious at 11. And that's when he corrected his shaykh one day in class. He basically narrated a hadith with the matan and the sanad. Of course, that's how they used to do it. And he said, no, impossible that those two people in that chain of narration could have met. Why? Because they lived in two different lands, two different time periods. He goes, no, what do you know? You're just an 11-year-old child. He says, I insist. So his shaykh checked his information and he realized that Al-Bukhari was right. And whenever Al-Bukhari would be in his classes, he'd get nervous when he would narrate. His sheikh would get nervous when he would narrate because Al-Bukhari was there. At 11 years old, that's when He showed signs and the first signs of greatness. Amazing. Within 6 years, he was a scholar. Already. He had basically taken everything he could from his hometown Bukhara by that time. And he said he had over 1,000 mashayikh. Over 1,000 teachers.
1,710.
Yeah. To be precise, he had 1,080. He had 1,080 mashayikh at 17 years of age. Allahu Akbar. And by that time, he had memorized so many ahadith and the chains. And not just that, he had memorized the dates and birthplaces of the men in that chain. When they were born, where they were born, when they died, who they met, were they reliable, were they trustworthy, were they liars. That's difficult because sometimes one hadith has 7 or 8 names. And the names are difficult. We're learning just 4 or 5 of the muhaddithin, and perhaps we've already forgotten what we mentioned last week. When was Ali Imam Ahmed born? Right? Difficult. Difficult. He memorized the matan and the sanad, not just that, when every narrator was born, when they lived, where they lived, when they died, everything. Allahu Akbar. Amazing. By 16 or 17. Usually kids, students, they finish school at 18, they haven't memorized one hadith. One. He had memorized thousands by then. And a teenager finishes school at, you know, year 12, hasn't memorized one hadith, one, maybe he'll memorize a matan or two, but give me the chain. When we say hadith, we mean chain and the text. Then, he stayed in Al-Basra. And Al-Basra is present-day Iraq. Kufa also. For 4 to 5 years. And then he went to Al-Hijaz. Egypt twice, Al-Madinah of course, where he said, at night I would go looking for a place to write down and basically revise my notes. There was nowhere to go because of course it was dark and he had needed light. So he said, I'd go to the grave of the Prophet Muhammad and I'd sit there next to his grave and record and revise my notes. Not because he's trying to get the barakah, no, we don't believe in that stuff. But because there was light there. So he'd sit there next to the grave of the Prophet. And he went to Baghdad. And that's where he met the illustrious Al-Imam Ahmad. And thus he was one of his teachers. Once again, we can see that these great men were all students of each other. He said, I saw Al-Imam Ahmad one day running with his shoes in Baghdad. Where was he running to? To catch the next movie? No, to catch the next halaqa, gathering of knowledge. He said, I saw him running with his shoes. Ayyuha Al-Imam, where are you going? Allahu Akbar. So he actually saw him. And all up, his travel and knowledge was for 4 decades. Now let's look at his actual sahih. How did he compile it and what's included? First and foremost, what was it called? Al-Jami' al-Sahih al-Musnad al-Mukhtasar. He didn't call it Sahih al-Bukhari. Allah Azza wa Jal changed that after his death. Now it's known as Sahih al-Bukhari. Allah placed the name Sahih, authentic, next to his name out of honoring, out of tashrif and takreem. Amazing. Look at these great men. They left such a legacy behind, and due to the ikhlas, their pure, sincere intention, Allah Azza wa Jal blessed their works and blessed their books after them. Everyone knows it as Sahih al-Bukhari, but he didn't call it that. Now, why did he compile this book? Al-Jami' al-Sahih al-Musnad al-Mukhtasar. Why did he compile it? 2 reasons. Number one, from dreams he had, and number two, from a casual remark from his sheikh. As for his dreams, there are at least 2. One day he saw a dream where he was defending Rasulullah. He was defending him and his honor. He had another dream where he said everyone was standing around the Prophet, on his right, on his left, ahead of him, and I was walking behind the Prophet in his footsteps. So those were his dreams. He dreamt about the Prophet a lot. These men, you've noticed also, the Salaf, they did dream about Rasulullah a lot as well. It wasn't just Al-Bukhari, but a lot of them. Why? Because they thought of Rasulullah. You know, today, many people, what do they dream about? They dream about their dream car, or their dream house, or their dream girl. Because they're always thinking about it. But they used to dream of Rasulullah a lot, because they used to think about him a lot. So he had dreams of Rasulullah. One day, his shaykh casually remarked in class, and who was his shaykh? Ishaq Ibn Rahawayn. a great scholar muhaddith, who was also the Shaykh of Al-Imam Muslim, which we're going to take in a moment. He made a casual remark in class. He said, I wish if only one of you guys, he's talking to his students, if only one of you students, one of the muhaddithin here, and he had thousands of students, would compile a book of hadith that only contained genuine narrations. He said, if only. That stuck in Al-Bukhari's mind, along with the dream, coupled together, he couldn't let it go. And from then on, he started compiling his amazing masterpiece, which is known today as Sahih Al-Bukhari. It took him 16 years to compile. SubhanAllah. 16 years. This was overnight. This amazing work took a lot of effort. 16 years. As we said, Ishaq ibn Rahawai had masses of students. All it took was a casual remark. So I'll make a casual remark right now. If only one of you brothers, inshallah, can be the next Al-Bukhari. That's it. One of the brothers gets up and leaves. The first step in the wrong direction. He should stay. So when you are sincere, my dear brothers, Allah will honor you in this world before the next. Now, this Sahih had, he said, I had memorized 600,000 to 700,000 hadith with their chains. 600,000 to 700,000 ahadith with their chains. And he said, I sifted through each one and I narrowed it down to 7,563. That's what Sahih al-Bukhari has today. How many ahadith?
7,563.
Ahsantum. So his Sahih has 7,563. He sifted through his own personal library, 600,000 ahadith, and he got it down to that number. He said, I could have had more. But he said he just wanted the cream of the crop, the best of the best, and he wanted a mukhtasar. What is a mukhtasar? That means summary in Arabic. Ikhtisar. To make something concise. So he said, I could have made it more. Maybe there's others which are abridged, even shorter, without the repetitions. Without the repetitions, it's around 2,500. Before he wrote down any narration, he would pray istikhara. Istikhara. Allahu Akbar. And one of, yeah. So he would pray, he prayed at least 7,500 times istikhara. And once one of his companions said, I saw Al-Bukhari get up around 18 times in one night just to edit his works. 18 times in one night. So that was a bare minimum. You can double, triple that number in terms of how many times he prayed istikhara. At best, we've prayed istikhara twice. Once for our house, and once for the wife. Right? Which house am I going to get? And which wife? Which spouse? And which house? Right? That's twice. He prayed it over 7,500 times. Now, was this man heavily criticized? He sure was. Don't think he wasn't without criticism. No. He was criticized and he was tested because haters are going to hate. When people see you with blessings and you have fadl and knowledge, people are going to hate. No matter how knowledgeable you are, there's haters out there. Allahu Musta'an. Let's mention some of these tests. There were many. Let's start with the first test in Baghdad. 10 men heard of this man, Al-Bukhari, who had memorized 600,000 ahadith. They go, no way. This can't be true. 10 of them conspired. They said, you know what, let's go sit in one of his lessons and ask him afterwards some well-known ahadith and we're going to mix up every single chain. So each man, how many of them were there? 10. And each man came with 10 ahadith. So 10 times 10? 100. 100 ahadith and 100 chains. They mixed them all up. So the first one stood up and he said, Ya ayyuhal imam, have you heard of this hadith? And he mentioned the hadith and the chain, but it was all mixed up. Well-known hadith. He said, never heard of it. What about this hadith? He'll mention it. Never heard of it. What about this hadith? He mentioned all 10. Al-Bukhari said, never heard any single one of them. People are freaking out. How can he not know these ahadith? They're well-known. Like, innama al-amalu binniyat, for example. Next person stands up. Another 10. Never heard any single one of them. Next person stands up. He says to his 10. Never heard any of them. Next person, all 10. When they're complete, basically 100 narrations. I haven't heard a single one of them. I don't know them. These are what I know. And he narrated every single hadith that they mentioned with the exact order of chains of narration. He fixed it all up for them. Yes, this is what I know. That's why. SubhanAllah. Amazing. So that was the first test in Baghdad. The test got harder later in Samarkand. This time, 400, not 10 students, 400 students put him to the test. And he succeeded in exposing all of their plots and tricks. 400. Allahu Akbar. He became extremely popular after that. After people now, rumors spread, this guy is amazing. No one can basically falter this guy. He became extremely popular. And when he went to Nisabur, which is the hometown of Imam Muslim, he had a grand reception. And there was a great muhaddith at the time there. Anyone know of his name? No. He was a hater. And none of you heard of him, because this is what Allah Azza wa Jalla does to the haters. People who are insincere. People doing it for showing off. People doing it for fame and fortune. Al-Dhuhali. This man, Al-Imam Al-Dhuhali, was a great muhaddith. He was teaching like Al-Imam Al-Bukhari. Al-Imam Al-Dhuhali, he heard of Al-Bukhari coming to his town. So he told his students, go and learn under Al-Bukhari, right? However, the people, once they heard Al-Bukhari, what did they do? They left Al-Dhuhali. They became addicted. Who wouldn't? So they left Al-Dhuhali. That's when he started to hate on him. He started to hate on Al-Bukhari and he spread rumors about him. He basically spread rumors that Al-Bukhari claims that the Quran is created. The fitna of Al-Imam Ahmad. And we said Al-Bukhari saw Al-Imam Ahmad. So that fitna extended into the time of Al-Imam Ahmad. And by the way, you asked me last week, did it extend into Shafi'i's time? No, he had died before the fitna struck. I checked up the dates. So he was basically also accused of kufr. So one day he's asked this question, what do you say about the Quran? Is it created? He said, the voice that you recite with is created, but not the words, which is true. Your voice, your vocal cords, your larynx, your voice box, isn't that created? It is. But the mushaf, the words of Allah, are not. So what did they do? They took the first part, they edited it, and they ran with it. They left out the second part. Just like people do today. 1 hour lecture, they'll take out a 2 minute snippet and they'll put it on YouTube. Oh, we expose the Sheikh, right? Or PDF refutation. Right? It happens. Even till today. So basically you had those people, same mentality back then. So he was accused of kufr, my brothers. Al-Bukhari was accused of kufr, yes. He was also accused, check this out, of not even being able to pray. One loser said, Al-Bukhari doesn't even know how to pray. He said, by Allah, if that man was to come here right now, I will give him 10,000 ahadith on prayer alone. Right now. Of course, he didn't dare show his face. Just the prayer. Not everything else, like the adhan, and ghusl, and wudu, and tahara. Just the salah. I'll give you 10,000 ahadith right now. Amazing. So he had haters, Allahul Musta'an. But eventually, people forgot the haters, and everyone remembered Al-Bukhari. And at times, he would enter a town with a huge grand reception, so many people, and he would leave with no one. Because, of course, the people there, they started to spread rumors. And it was mentioned when he died, there was approximately two or three people who buried him. That was it. Remember Al-Imam Ahmad, we had 600,000 people to 2.5 million at his graveyard, at his funeral. Well, he had around 2 to 3 people bury him. But perhaps Allah Azza wa Jalla did that to protect his ikhlas, to protect his heart. Look what happened after he died. Amazing. So those were some of the tests he faced. As for his taqwa, he once made a dua after all these rumors were being spread around him. After all these rumors were being spread about him. His student said, I was there and I was listening to Al-Bukhari make this dua. What was he saying? Oh Allah, you know they are saying this because of jealousy. You know they are only saying this out of hatred, out of envy. He said, I was waiting for Al-Bukhari to make dua against them, but that dua never came. He had taqwa. Because these are his brothers at the end of the day. His Muslim brothers. Amazing. He didn't have this, you know, hatred and animosity in his heart. Because your heart is too valuable for hatred and animosity to rent a spot. True? Keep it up. And he even said one day, Allah will not punish me on the Day of Judgment for backbiting. How can you say that, ya Imam? How can you have the confidence to say that? He said, because of the way he would deem people unreliable. He wouldn't say he's a liar. He'll say his trustworthiness, his truthfulness is questionable. That is it. His credibility is questionable. That's all he would have to say. If Al-Bukhari said your truthfulness is questionable, that is it. You're definitely questionable. So that's all he had to say. But that was out of his taqwa. Not like today. What do people do? Yeah, kathab, not kathab. Kathab. Right, with the shadda to indicate something which is perpetual. And fasiq and munafiq, right? We've seen this recently, brothers in the UK. These people are munafiqoon, these are kuffar. You do this, you're a kafir. Yeah, you're a kafir. Making takfir. And he straight out takfir. Not even giving their brothers excuses. Al-Bukhari wouldn't even do that. He'll say his truthfulness is questionable. That was all, yani basically, he'd have to say to for people to put doubt about that person. Ibn Khuzaymah said, he also authored a book of authentic narrations. He said, I've never seen anyone beneath the canopy of the heaven who has more knowledge of the ahadith of Rasulullah than Al-Bukhari. Ibn Ja'far said, and this quote sums up who Al-Bukhari was, and we'll end here. If I was able to take moments from my life and give it to Al-Bukhari, I would have done so. Because when I die, this is Ibn Ja'far, who was a great scholar. If I die, a little bit of knowledge is buried with me. But when Al-Bukhari died, a lot of knowledge was buried with him. If I was able to take from my life and grant it to him, I would have done so. And of course, Al-Bukhari wrote many books, and his famous is Al-Jami' al-Sahih. He also wrote Al-Tariq al-Kabir and Al-Adab al-Mufrad, which are also great books. They, one is on history and one is on manners. He died in the year 256 after Hijrah, on the eve of Eid al-Fitr. But what a Eid he would have. One of the great scholars of his time. And his name has eluded me at the moment, but it's an authentic narration. He said, I had a dream that I saw the Prophet Muhammad. Once again, he used to dream a lot of Rasulullah. I saw the Prophet Muhammad, and he was waiting there. He said, Ya Rasulullah, who are you waiting for? He said, we're waiting for Muhammad ibn Ismail, al-Bukhari. I woke up, and I was given the news that day that al-Bukhari had passed away. So he saw a dream that Rasulullah was waiting for him. He said he died that very day. Allah Azza wa Jalla have mercy upon him and all the scholars. Let's go on to mention Al-Imam Muslim now.